right until you do wrong. Then it comes in on you with all its power. Therefore, right is not a tyranny. Right is a simple action in conformity with the rules of the game of life. It is the keeping the rules and enjoying the result of good citizenship. The moment the individual becomes a bad citizen, then the laws of the eternal nature come in upon him with all their destructive and miserable reactions. But they do not come in unless we break them. We do not know of evil while we do good. We do not know of ignorance while we are naturally wise. All the artificial achievements which we vanish, which we image too highly, slip away. But the integrities remain forever. And those who keep in harmony with these integrities live at peace with themselves. And this is the beginning of living in peace with the world. Now we take the human body and we say that it is a regulator of all the affairs of nature. We study the human body in terms of ancient philosophy, and we find that even the early physiologists were pretty well acquainted with this particular problem. They knew, for instance, all about the 12 wise men on the top of the mountain. They realized the 12 apostles, all these things, and they realized that there are 12 convolutions of the brain in the ancient mountain on the top of the great hill, that the mysterious world of Brahma is on the shoulders. In the tabernacle of the Jews, it is laid out, instead of rising, it retires into the depths. Here again, you have the three steps of retirement, and in the end, in the Holy of Holies, the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant consists of angels with their wings meeting over the mercy seat. These wings of the angels are again the convolutions of the brain. And between them rises the flame of the Shekinah's glory. For when the Lord came to bring messengers to his priests and his prophets, he appeared as a great light upon the mercy seat. The mercy seat is the third ventricle of the brain. The glory of the Lord is the flame that blazes out between the pituitary body and the pineal gland. Every part of the philosophical and religious mystery is actually performed in the secret part of the human body. We find also that the human body, with the brain that's above it, the spine, which is the whipcord of the small cord, the 33 segments of the spine are the 33 years of the life of Christ, and are the 33 years which required to complete the temple. Also, the small filaments of spinal cord at the base are referred to as the whip of small cords with which Jesus cast the money lenders out of the temple. All of these things have their physical, bodily equivalent and are perfectly balanced. We know that the diaphragm supports the Mount Moriah on which stands the Temple of Solomon. We know that the vagus nerve is the great river of life. We know all these things. And for instance, we know that there is the anatomy now refers to certain small growths at the base of the skull at the back as the pyramids. It knows that the outer cover of the brain is the dura mater, the rough or strong mother, and the inner covering is the pia mater, or the very subtle and gentle mother. All these terms are used in anatomy. And every one of them can be tied back to some religious facts, because they pertain to facts and circumstances that are unchanging. Everything that is inside of us is a miniature of everything that is outside of us. And when we begin to realize that, we also realize that all the false glories, all the crimes, and all the corruption are massive physical enlargements of the bad habits that are continually fluttering around in our own subjective lives. So we try to work with all of these problems, knowing that the first problem we have is this physical body, that we want to live in it as long as we can and as helpfully and happily as possible. And that to do this, we must do what we can. No one will do it perfectly, but we'll do what we can to make it not only a useful body, but dedicate its use to some purpose beyond the wasting of time. That there is always something to be done. That a body should be built in the mother's womb to go through all of this mysterious transformation, pass through all the kingdoms of nature in miniature, and finally become born into this world in great pain and travail. But all this would happen. Then it should start and grow up and go through all the problems of becoming an adult out of the stress and pressures of our modern environment. And what does it do when it has accomplished everything? It takes on narcotics and kills itself. This is not what was intended. And there is no way in which this type of thing can ever produce forgiveness of sin, because it is not a forgivable sin. Sin is very different. This is simply an individual who actually doesn't know or doesn't believe that he has any purpose in life other than to try to stay here in some way as long as he's comfortable. These things have to be built in. And why do we say they have to be built in? Because they are part of the science of the human being, which means they are part of the science of medicine. But they are the part of physiology, psychology, anthropology. They are part of all the systems of work that have to do with the well-being of the individual. And every day today, there are new problems created. These problems probably will not be corrected by use of memory. They will be corrected only by the use of the mind in a proper way to solve the difficulties which have resulted from using the mind in the wrong way. It must be used as it was intended. So we find health not to be divided from wisdom. And the functions of the body are one with our love for God and our fellow man. There is no way in which hate can ever produce anything but trouble. And while we hope that it's going to trouble somebody else, it always finally troubles us. So little by little, we become aware of psychical or physiological the mysteries relating to the body. We realize that it is something that can be incredibly important, that we can produce in this world leaders who will protect us and guide us and help us all to attain the fullness of our manifestation. It can produce families of people who really understand each other and are willing to sacrifice together for the common good. It will produce those who are willing to labor for peace and suffer as necessary to overcome the dissonances of war. All things can happen if we release into manifestation the basic potentials of the human being. And to do this, we have to realize that we are constantly being injured in even the simplest things we want to do right. It isn't always possible for us to know what is right. We can only know what we are told unless we do some thinking. If we are willing to hope that somebody who claims to be an authority can speak for us, then we have to take the chances. It's exactly like the probabilities of finding a good bookkeeper or a good doctor. All these things have to be either done by ourselves or else they have to be delegated. And if they are delegated, we have to expect a certain amount of imperfection or incompletion. Ultimately, everyone must lead his own life into the good world we all hope for. In the meantime, however, it is necessary to recognize the basic facts of life. I had a letter not long ago from someone who is trying to improve by the use of new and religious ideals now current, and wants to know if certain groups are legitimate and certain groups are telling the truth, and if it's all well in the religious world. Well, it's practically impossible to answer questions of that nature. No one knows, really, how good anything is except the person who creates it. If the individual who creates something does so for the common good, it will probably be good. If he will create it for the good of himself or profit, it'll probably not be good. These are rules that we all have to face. Now, we also have to owe something. We owe something to the earth beneath our feet to help this body. We owe something to all the kingdoms of nature that give us food and give us health at all times. We owe something to all the different levels of society which give us protection or give us opportunities. We owe a great deal to those who help us to achieve a good education or develop good habits. everywhere we owe a lot to life, and that means that we have that debt that must always be paid. If we accept life and do not pay the debt, we will reap death. This is all part of the physical world. It is a world that you can study geographically with its mountains and its streams, its lakes and its valleys. It is also the psychological globe or world, which we can say is made up of moods, feelings, beliefs, attitudes, customs. All these things are part of a social or civilized world government or world life. Each of these things has to be given consideration. And we could hope, sincerely, that each individual who really wants to improve will give some thought and some effort to correcting the imperfections of his own nature. Not because we want to hurt him or worry him or we want to torture him, but simply we want to save him from the inevitable suffering that comes from willfulness or ignorance. We have now better knowledge of many things than we had before, but we also have developed a strange and almost uncontrollable abandon economically and socially. We live only to spend, and in order to do this, we must steal. And if we take the other man's money, it's exactly like taking his food. For if it is his life and its only support and only security, we have no right to make this impossible to him. The human body has to be at peace. Now, where does the human body most often get sick? Well, I have been told, in fact, my old friend Evangeline Adams, the astrologer, told me once, that sickness and death always begin with the intestines. That nearly everything that destroys us is some kind of an indigestion. It can be a religious indigestion that makes us a fanatic. It can be a social indignation or indigestion that makes us antisocial. It can be almost anything, but it is something that has to do with a digestion and assimilation. It means that we've taken in something that cannot be properly handled by the body, that we are not giving the body its due care and attention, that if we do not take care of it, it will start to disintegrate, and when it wants to go, it will make the intestinal tract a living hell while we're still in this world. It can be a very serious and terrible thing. So we have to prepare. Now, if we want to keep out of hell morally, according to our friends, the theologians, we've got to keep the good word. And if we want to stay out of the hell of intestinal disintegration, we've got to watch what we eat, how we eat, and when. We also must always realize that all food must be taken with a gentle spirit. No one should eat when he's angry, eat when he's upset, eat when he is not hungry, all these kind of things. But he should so live that about three times a day or thereabouts, he will be happy enough to eat normally. If he does that, he will probably have a pretty good digestive system. But everything we do goes right back to an analogy or a simile in the body itself. We find that we are also composed of creatures that have reaction to what we eat. Now, it should never be forgotten that every food element has a dispositional factor. To a certain measure, we are what we eat. Not entirely, but practically all forms of food have moral and psychological reactions. And many an individual who thinks he's dying of a bad psychosis is simply dying of frustrated indigestion. All the different things that we have to do are very simple. Now, the ancients pointed out that the more money we have, the more luxurious we are, the more likely we are to be sick. Because the moment we become luxury-loving, we are in serious trouble. And Rand went to a Greek philosopher and said, "Master, if I was to damn a man, what could I do that would most destroy him?" The philosopher thought for a couple of minutes. "Well, if you wish to do the worst thing you can do him, tell him you hope that his sons will live luxuriously. Because if so, they will be a disgrace to you for the rest of their lives." So all these things go back to the body. They go back to the physical structure with which we are endowed. They tell us something that we should watch and listen. we cannot solve these problems with stomach pills. We cannot get away from these mistakes. We cannot get away from the danger of alcoholism. We cannot get over the disabilities of cigarette smoking. We cannot possibly get over narcotic addiction. And we can't get over all forms of rich and indigestible food. These things are destroying not just us. But imagine now that we became infinitely small and we're located somewhere in the southwest corner of the liver. It's a funny place to be, but it'll do for the moment. Being in the place of the liver and being a 1/1,000,000th of an inch in diameter. And we are there, and this is our homeland. This is the land for which our fathers died, this little piece in the corner of the liver. And in the midst of the fact that we're getting along pretty well, the family is secure, and we're just getting down to the point where life will be pleasant, suddenly there's a terrible agitation. An earthquake has struck the liver. Now, what caused the earthquake? Overindulgence. There may have been a little psychosis of the liver thrown in. But all of a sudden, this little being, everything that's important is taken away from it. It has no longer the power to live. It has no longer the power to do anything. Its world has been destroyed by somebody who ate too much. And who is his God? He had no way of resisting this. But all of a sudden, the power that fashioned him destroys him. And he gets very little not to understand. All he can do, if he can do anything, is to weep and fade away. Now, in another world, that's such as we're in the big one, like now. All right, instead of being in the corner of the liver, you could be in the center of Armenia a few weeks ago, when a great earthquake came through and destroyed better than 30,000 people. This, which seems to be an act of nature, nobody knows what to do about it. They just think it's one of those things that happen. We don't have to think that. Because long ago, back in Alexandria, when they were studying all these types of things, they realized that earthquakes do not come just simply out of indifference in nature or accidents that can't be described. Just as the individual destroyed the little bit of power of the liver to take care of that little cell, so earthquakes are acts of mortal reaction to a great body suffering from sickness. The planet can be sick. It can have a broken heart. It probably has. It can have dyspepsia. It can have angina pectoris. It can have neurosis. It can become completely involved in some mysterious psychic stress pattern. It can become mentally disturbed, emotionally disturbed. It can have anything happen to it that can happen to a human body. Because after all, it's all one pattern. One only degree of magnitude, not any change in the actual pattern itself. So as long as we are bad to the body, individual, we will have those problems. And as long as humanity is bad to the body, the earth on which it lives, the time will come, as they said in India, when the Great Mother will shake us again from the face of her body. All these things are part of a pattern. And the human body is, as Paracelsus said, the little book in which we can see happening around us and within us practically every faction and function that we observe today. It is definitely a part of our inevitable that we should see the analogy of the great Hermetic axiom, as above, so below, as in the great, so in the less, as in the upper, so in the lower. All these things are all one quality moving through the different levels and layers of culture, civilization, anatomy, physiology, and function. All these things are part of one pattern. You could break the heart of an individual and he'll die slowly to a broken heart. You can break the heart of a nation and it will die. You can make all these things work on all these levels. You can see the cause of crime. You can see all the different reasons why things go wrong when you begin to realize that we are all part of a living organism, various size models of the same thing. This was discovered probably 10,000 years ago. It was known in Egypt at least 5,000 years ago. And it is still that way. But to us, that is no longer a fact. It is simply one of these mysterious faculties or functions which we simply call memory. We have only the memory of it. We knew that it happened in Egypt. We knew that it happened in Atlantis. We knew that it was screamed by the Sibylline oracles. But that doesn't make much difference. We do not know the real actions and functions. We do not really know what we have to do to get over it. Well, Paracelsus says it's only not so complicated. The only way to get over the consequences of our mistakes is to stop making them. There is no way we will ever have them blessed and continue to make them. If our world is in trouble, it can always remain in trouble until we correct the trouble. Now, we are not going to correct the trouble by writing books on the trouble. We're not going to do it by quoting the elders who wrote on the trouble. We're not going to get it from studies of trouble of 1,000, 2,000 years ago. They may give us a hint, but that's not the problem. The problem is to stop the trouble we're making right now. And we're going to have to use new ways of doing it. The answer to the problem of human regeneration cannot be taken directly from the past. It can be understood or sensed in terms of the past. But the answer must be now. It must be in terms of the immediate situation. We have had all kinds of troubles in the past. We've had wars in the past. But this is the first time we've had an atomic war. And that changes the whole pattern, requiring an entirely new group of solutions. It's not going to be possible to do what they did long ago, arbitrate a war, and sit around a table and sign the peace treaty. Now it's going to take more. We're gradually approaching the danger point in which there is no way of stopping the mistake except to stop making it. And that is the thing we're all fighting against. We're fighting against the curbing of our luxuries, our expenditures, our jealousies, our affections, or our hatreds. We want them to be all left alone so that we can do as we like. Every nation that has done it that way has died. But the fact that it died doesn't mean that we could save ours simply by copying the laws of the other one. There is a separate factor every time because there is an evolutionary movement here. Things are moving. Therefore, all solutions must be moving solutions. They cannot be based upon some static point 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. They have to be used in a new way. We can take the morality, we can take the ethics, we can take everything that is useful out of the past. But in each case, there must be a positive, immediate action of our own to take care of the situation. We must make a move that no man has ever done before if we are to solve a problem that no man has ever faced before. All this causes us to find it very interesting, useful, and important to study the human body, to realize what it is composed of, and to realize that we have here a living model of the greater world, a living model that challenges us, a model that gives each of us an examination every term in school paper, a model that answers our question and tells us the truth whether we want to hear it or not. This the body then becomes man's most immediate agent for improvement, for the resolution of problems. After all, we don't know this, but we may as well face it. The physical problems, after all, are really the easiest to solve. We have much more that goes beyond the physical. This is just the first step. But if we get this first step right, the further inspiration of the achievement will help us a long way to the next step. As Gautama Buddha pointed out, the first step to salvation is the most difficult. It is the first step because we do not know where we are going. But once we make a step forward and discover that there is solid earth under our feet, that we are moving in a direction, that we are gradually overcoming the hindrances that prevent us from doing things well. Buddhism calls all these mistakes hindrances. They are all things that delay. What we call the mistakes of the day are delays. Everything is a delay. It is something that prevents the proper motion of things. A delay or a hindrance is something, an object or condition, which stands between us and peace, stands between us and the fulfillment of that which is right and good. If, therefore, we are able to overcome these hindrances physically, we will then find that we have a physical foundation upon which to raise the next problem that we have to face. And that is the gradual vitality of the human body. The human body goes on up and up and up until it vanishes. But the first thing it has to do is to establish a basic foundation. The moment it does that, then it goes into the glandular system, the autonomic nervous system, the cerebrospinal nervous system, into all the organs, and we want to start and work with those, at least a little, in this series of lectures. It is to prove that all the way we have a living text that will never tell us that we're right until we are right now, that will never bring health to the sick unless we do that which is necessary now. While Nostradamus was medical officer of Salon in France, there was a bad outbreak of diarrhea in the country. And he suggested that it was probably caused by a swamp in the outskirts of the city, which was known to be have a bad smell and to be surrounded by strange insects and creatures. He thinks it should have been drained. He wanted the people to drain the swamp. Well, they appreciated his requirement. They thought he was the most wonderful man in the world, and they would take it up with the city council. The city council did nothing. Therefore, Nostradamus took up his little box, got back on his old mule, and rode out of the city. His advice was priceless. They loved him devoutly. But when he asked them to drain the county swamp, nothing doing. The swamp had always been there. So when we say to somebody, you have to drain that temper you have, it's getting you in trouble, you lose a friend right on the spot. They know that they need to change, but they don't want to be reminded. So we hope always that we will be able to achieve health, peace of mind, world balance and equilibrium, and overcoming poverty and crime without changing our own conduct. Any physician can tell you that you can't get over the effects of over-drugging without giving up the drug. And we cannot get over some bad habits until we change the habits. Otherwise, the comfort of being sick from the habits will continue. And we will keep right on until we slip off into that quietude, which will give us some time to thought before we build up another body. But it takes a good many bodies generally to get to the individual to say to himself, it takes me 20, 21 years to get this body functioning. I have to get up and be born. I have to cry. I have to be weaned. I have to gradually go to the primary school or kindergarten. I have to go through the experiences of social adjustment with my peers, the other members of school. I have to get over the younger sicknesses. I have to do the teething. I have to do all kinds of things. And finally, I have to get educated enough to get a job. And I've been 20 years old by that time and have all that work behind me, all this problem. And then what do we do with it? Well, one sort of person told me they thought after all that work, they ought to spend the rest of their life playing. But it doesn't work that way. What they really have to do when they get that tranquil background is spend their life doing something that makes all this misery worthwhile. If they don't do that, then the misery will continue instead of the life. So we have everywhere in the world today people who want to live better than they are living. But very few of them want to give up their animosity. They do not want to make the changes which, in a case of sickness, would help them to restore health. But they are sick. There are all levels of sickness. And until each level is mastered, corrected, or understood, and if necessary, apologized for, there is no probability of improvement. So these philosophers, the Rosicrucians and the Alchemists and the Kabbalists, had this realization that you cannot depend entirely upon memory for anything. You have to take what you remember of the past, put it into the test of now. The past helps, but does not complete. Everything that has to be solved must be solved by the individual growing now. Now, there's nothing in this growth pattern that says he has to be perfect. Because a 10% improvement would so change his life he'd never recognize it. But it is true that he has to change himself. Tradition, example, knowledge of the past may give him some of the instruments to work with. But he must take those instruments, adapt them to the pressures of the moment, and live clean and clear now. And that is the only way he can get over the problem. There is no way in which he can substitute economic success for any major form of ailment. There was a man up in Alaska who got a lot of gold after gold strikes up there. And of course, having a lot of money, he wined and dined himself to the point that he came to his deathbed. And they told him his only hope, and that is if he went out to Mayo Brothers, maybe they could save him. So off he goes to Mayo Brothers. They work on him for a while, patch him up pretty well, and they tell him that he'll make quite a little more mileage off this old body if he will live principally on bread and milk, if he keeps away from all rich foods. So he goes back up to Alaska again, and he's so happy that he's going to have a little further lease on life that he puts on a big banquet for all his friends and dies the next morning. Now, this is a rather abrupt answer, but hundreds and thousands of people are doing this very thing just a little more slowly. So another thing is important. If you understand the mysteries of the human being, the body, the mind, and the soul, you can also, in this way, gain a very full understanding of practically every external phenomenon of nature. You will find that in becoming master of yourself, you become master of all worlds. And the fact that you're the master of all worlds is proven by the simple fact that under no conditions will you allow yourself to corrupt any world. That your management or ownership of it shall be for its good and for the fulfillment of the noblest parts of yourself. The world is gradually becoming healthy, mentally, immorally, physically. By keeping the simple rules of now, we'll find that he can then derive from the past certain principles that are useful to him. But by his own constructive, creative, enlightened thinking, he must make those rules applicable to the conditions of today. If he can do this, all will be well. That's it.